Hi, guys.
Hey, y'all.
James is not here this week.
But I'm back.
But Emily is back, and I am still here.
He is still here. We're really excited. We have a great, very timely interview with Jennifer Hoppe, the Deputy Director of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, which is a sister organization of Everytown, which, as I'm sure you know, extremely active right now and all the time. So stick around for that in about half hour.
Yeah.
She's our first double visitor.
Double visitor. Yeah.
Because it's an important issue.
It is.
And we need action around gun sense in America.
And we're going to get into it right now with gun control. So there was a historic CNN town hall this past week about gun control, where a lot of the students and survivors of the Parkland shooting massacre were brought in to ask questions. And Marco Rubio came. Sheriff Israel came. Dana Loesch, who's the spokesperson for the NRA, came. And this is a New York Times article. It says Marco Rubio and an NRA official were jeered and lectured on gun control by Michael D. Shear, in which he writes that Senator Marco Rubio and a spokeswoman, Dana Loesch, for the National Rifle Association were repeatedly heckled at a nationally televised forum on Wednesday night in Florida after they refused to back new gun control measures. The spokeswoman for the NRA, again, Dana Loesch, offering the group's first public comments after a shooting last week at a Florida high school, strongly defended the gun advocacy group's positions in front of students and teachers from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Mr. Rubio, the Republican senator of Florida, also drew the ire of the crowd for refusing to support a ban on assault weapons and for saying that he intended to continue accepting money from the NRA and other groups that support his pro-gun agenda. President Trump and Governor Rick Scott of Florida, a Republican, both declined invitations to participate in the town hall-style meeting.
No surprise there.
No surprise there. Ms. Loesch repeatedly deflected questions about restrictions on the availability of guns, insisting instead that keeping guns out of the hands of the mentally ill or people with criminal records would keep students safe. The issue of donations was raised by a junior at Stoneman Douglas who stood just feet away from the senator and asked him whether he would renounce money from the gun advocacy group in the future. When Mr. Rubio refused, the audience booed loudly. Mr. Rubio said that people buy into my agenda and I do support the Second Amendment. He just has no spine. Marco Rubio is just a stain on American politics.
And again, I mean,
a dirty stain. A dirty, disgusting, sad stain.
Can I say something now?
Yeah. Obadiah Thanks. Stain.
Okay. But we'll get into this with Jennifer. But, even she says later on, it's not, I mean, it is about the Second Amendment, but like, that's not a reasonable next step that's going to go away anytime soon. But yeah. Every town of Moms Demand Sense is not even taking that stance. They just want safe control over what's currently happening, you know, and by pushing it off as if like, by making it about that, we're not actually talking about what is happening on the ground.
I will say,
I'm not sure if that was very clear.
But I just want to.
Maybe you could clear it up for me.
Well, I was saying that the I'm really impressed by these kids.
Yeah,
these high schoolers.
Calling them out.
Oh, this was so funny. They're very funny. They're very good at Twitter. I saw somebody on Twitter say that they're frighteningly good at Twitter, and they are really.
Well, they grew up with it the whole time.
Right. Well,
it's a skill you develop. We hear
Sarah Chadwick, who is a survivor of the Stoneman Douglas shooting, tweeted out that we should change the names of AR-15s to Marco Rubio because they're so easy to buy. Oh my goodness.
What a writer.
Oh my goodness.
Pointed.
I love that.
Yeah.
So now a lot of groups are ending their partnerships with
great.
The NRA. Yeah,
which is great, but also like as someone from Atlanta, I guess I could have assumed that Delta was doing that, but I had no idea. So when it came out, it was very interesting. But there's multiple articles that cover this, obviously, but Delta, among many other airlines, I think United as well, and a few other, have announced on Twitter that they would be ending the NRA's contract for discounted rates through their group travel program. And they asked the group to remove all their airline information from their website, logos, and whatnot. And I talked to my friend yesterday who actually works at United, and he was like, I work at United, and I didn't even know we were doing that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's refreshing, I guess, that these large corporations are taking a stance.
Doing something about it.
Doing something about it.
If you have a problem, and you can look online We don't have exact link right now, but if you can, you can look online and say which companies support the NRA, and then you can tweet at them or you can call them. I mean, Delta is a gigantic multi-billion dollar company, and so is United. All these companies are moving away from them because they found out online that they were supporting the NRA. I tweeted at FedEx. FedEx is still supporting the NRA. I will not be using FedEx anymore.
Yep.
I'm a UPS boy now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There are other companies include some car rental companies like Enterprise and Hertz. Moving companies like Allied Van Lines and North American Van Lines have all ended partnerships amidst the backlash, which at this point I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah. So this is, I also want to chat about this. So there was also a, there was the town hall that happened in Florida, but then Trump had sort of a bunch of people gather around at the White House and talk about gun control, in which the topic of arming teachers, and we talked with Jennifer about this, came up. And there were some people that were very in favor of arming teachers. And it is so problematic. Teachers already are not paid enough. They already have enough on their plate. And now we're talking about arming teachers. And a point that was raised online I saw a lot was, what happens if you have a school shooter and then you have an African-American teacher with a gun when the police show up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or any version of that. And Jennifer, again, talks about some of this. You know, if you play it out in your head any number of ways, it rarely comes out as a successful tactic.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, my sister's a principal. I mean, we all know teachers in our lives. Most of us have been to school. And it's like these people that are, again, as teachers, like they need to be focused on educating.
Yeah.
You know, they
guns.
Need to, and safety to an extent. But like once they're in the classroom, that should be a safe space.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think it's
the only issue in the United States that keeps happening, and we do nothing about it. Like every other thing that happens, like those little eggs that kids choked on.
Yes,
they're not allowed in America anymore.
Yeah, yes, I hear you. But that being said, also I think circling back to our first interview with Jennifer, you know, taking a look at every town's the tool that they have that allocates all the information online to see where the small victories have happened. I remember last October we talked about a big victory of a bill that passed in Rhode Island. And so there are small steps that are taking, but it is kind of, I think we might be at that tipping point that you just brought up of like, when is it just like, okay, we're not doing this anymore.
Sure.
You know, when is that big shift? So,
I don't know. I just think, I don't know.
The sooner the better, but
I also want to talk about this. So the Parkland, like the kids from the high school that are coming out against the NRA are getting smeared online. People are saying that they're crisis actors, which is wild and completely inappropriate. I mean, if you love guns to the point that you don't believe these kids that got shot at in their school, go away. Just go away. You know?
Yeah.
But this was very interesting. So, and this comes back a lot of the times.
And
whenever
also
the
with
right
people like that, I'm sorry to interrupt, but with people like that that are making that kind of claim or whatever, I just get very confused because what if your kid was one of the kids in that room that got shot?
Yeah.
Like, would you really be like, no son or no daughter, we shouldn't be talking
about
this?
Different. It's like that country singer at the Las Vegas shooting. He had a gun. He was like, I had a gun. It didn't make any difference. I've completely changed my position on guns. But I've also noticed this a lot. Whenever the right wing attacks a left wing principal or, you know, people coming against the NRA or something that is historically Republican, whenever the right wing accuses the left wing of doing something like that, they are usually projecting because they are actually doing that. So this is from an article from the Business Insider by Eliza Relman. And we don't like to get into much of this stuff. We just like to kind of report the news. But I thought this was interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
So a Parkland shooting survivor's family shops doctored emails with CNN to media outlets. Again, Eliza Relman wrote this for Business Insider. The family of Colton Hobb, a student at the Florida high school where a gunman killed 17 people last week, provided a doctored email to media outlets in order to defend Hobb's claims that CNN rewrote a question for him to ask at the network's Wednesday town hall style event on school shootings. Hobb told the Fox News host and gremlin, Tucker Carlson, on Thursday night that CNN executive producer Kerry Stevenson gave him a question to deliver to lawmakers and told him to stick to the script. But CNN says there is absolutely no truth to Colton's claims, which he first made on a Miami TV news station. In my interview with CNN, I had talked about arming the teachers if they were willing to arm themselves in the school to carry on campus, Hobb told Carlson. And she had taken that of what I had been briefed on and actually wrote that question out for me. CNN said that Stevenson and Colton agreed on one question that Colton would ask, but that Hobb's father, Glenn Hobb, intervened, sending a lengthy speech that he wanted Colton to read, which included three questions for lawmakers. Stevenson then responded that the speech was way too long and that Colton needs to stick to the question that they agreed on. Glenn then responded that he and his son are not actors and that Colton would not participate in the town hall if he could not read the full speech. So this kind of answers your question. What happens if you... This guy's child was shot at and sort of insinuates that his fellow students, his fellow classmates, are actors when in fact they sent a doctored email. It even says in CNN's version of one email, Stevenson told Glenn that Colton needed to stick to a question that he and Stevenson discussed on the phone that he submitted. But in the version of the email provided by Colton to Fox and the Huffington Post, the phrase that he submitted is deleted. So this is what I'm saying. There
I'm
are people.
My head no.
There are people that are so focused on gun rights that even his kid was shot at, his classmates died, and their main priority was to make CNN look like fake news. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. Well.
Let's go to Russia.
Please stick around for our interview on that to learn more and all of the above. So let's go to, if we have to, Russia.
We sure do.
We sure do.
So former Trump aide. Oh, sorry. Were you going to do that? You want to do
it? You can do it.
I always feel
we
like.
We could do every other word.
I just like when I, whenever I read these titles, I feel like Jake Tapper for a moment. When he goes, former Trump aide Rick Gates to plead guilty, agrees to testify against Manafort, sources say. We'll be right back. I just love how he says it. This is by David Willman from the LA Times. A former top aide to Donald Trump's presidential campaign will plead guilty to fraud-related charges within days and has made clear to prosecutors that he would testify against Paul Manafort, the lawyer lobbyist who once managed the campaign. The change of heart by Trump's former deputy campaign manager Richard Gates, who had pleaded not guilty after being indicted in October on charges similar to Manafort's, was described in interviews by people familiar with the case.
I imagine you practicing this in like looking in the mirror by doing all the facial expressions you just did.
Yeah.
That are
I'm reading most of this. I mean, I've gathered the news, but I'm reading a lot of it out loud for the first time. That's just
well,
I'm a classically trained actor.
Hats off to your theater degree from where? The University of Michigan.
Go Blue.
What? Go Blue.
Yes. I've also worked with the Royal Shakespeare Company and Rita Moreca. So if there are any casting directors out there listening to this, wondering
oh
if
my God,
anybody can handle something.
Not
I didn't do it during the gun control thing.
Nick
I'm doing it during
Starr
Russia
right now.
Yeah, I'm doing a little advertisement.
I miss James.
During the downfall of our democracy.
I miss James. Carry on. You were doing a great job.
The October 27th indictment showed that prosecutors had amassed, I sound a little like him, substantial documentation to buttress their changes that Manafort and Gates, who were colleagues in political consulting for about a decade, had engaged in a complex series of allegedly illegal transactions rooted in Ukraine. The indictment alleged that both men, who for years were unregistered agents of the Ukrainian government, hid millions of dollars on Ukraine-based payments from U.S. authorities. So this is a big, so a lot of people are going to say, what does this have to do with the Trump campaign? The answer is nothing. It has nothing to do with it.
But it does show like the type of people that we choose to keep around
well,
us.
Well, yes. So it shows that the greatest people that he's hired. But also what's happening is Rick Gates and Paul Manafort are people who do not want to spill on Donald Trump. So Mueller knows that they have information. So he said, I wonder if they're doing anything illegal. I'm going to look into it.
And ta-da.
And they happen to be doing a lot of illegal stuff. And then he says,
like
I'm going to use
laundering.
That. Like money laundering. And, you know.
And steps to evade U.S. taxes.
Right. So he
falls under money laundering as well, but you know.
So he's finding all of these things and he's using that to squeeze information out of them. And it sounds like he's doing that with Rick Gates, who is a man who is a father of four kids who is facing 30 years in prison. So that's why he's doing this, because if he does a plea deal, then he can reduce his sentence to, I think some people are saying about 18 months in jail. So he's a dad. He can't handle all these legal bills. So if you can get him to flip, which is what Mueller is doing.
Yep.
The big fish isn't the fact that they're getting Mueller and Manafort on fraud charges. That's great. But what they're really doing is squeezing them so they're getting information.
That is great. Let's just, we are anti-fraud.
I'm just saying that that's not the.
But that, again, yeah, you're right. You're using it as a way to get.
I think that people think that like a special counsel has a right to investigate anything. Like with Ken Starr, it started with Whitewater, but it ended with Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
It didn't start with Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
So the FBI is also investigating whether Russian money went to the NRA's campaign to help elect Donald Trump. What? That what? Pesky little group keeps coming up.
What?
That pesky little group.
Here they are.
The NRA.
Here they are.
So Andrew Buncombe of The Independent wrote that activists are demanding that the National Rifle Association reveal if it received donations from Russia after it was reported the FBI is investigating whether a Kremlin-linked Moscow businessman channeled money to the group's campaign to help Donald Trump win the election. Do you want to take any?
Sure.
I feel like I've been...
You've been doing a
great
job.
Reading a lot.
Yeah, you've been doing a great job. So, I mean, I think we can move on, right?
Do you want to? Well, I just think the guy that should be... we should know his name, right?
Sure.
I thought you were going to read it.
I'm lost in my notes. Where are we?
So, oh no. Okay.
With the influence of the NRA.
So it was recently repeated that the FBI was focusing its attention on Alexander Torshin, a former member of the upper house of Russia's parliament.
You skipped like a whole
page. I skipped a couple things that weren't important.
I know,
and currently deputy governor
brisk.
Of Russia's central bank, who is said to have a close relationship with Russian President Vladimir Putin, the 64-year-old gun enthusiast is also said to be a life member of the NRA. So this guy... Oh, boy. This guy was a member of the upper house of Russia's parliament.
Uh-huh.
He's the deputy governor of Russia's central bank, and he's tight with Putin, and he has a role in the NRA. So Kristen Brown...
You're not there yet. Kristen Brown,
yeah,
co-president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, told The Independent that the NRA, which was founded in 1871, is a recreational group designed to promote and encourage rifle shooting on a scientific basis. Hilarious. Today got most of its funding from gun manufacturers, of course.
Yeah.
The NRA spent a record of $55 million during the 2016 election cycle, directing money towards campaigns and adverts supporting members of Congress it judged to be most supportive of its aims and policies. Senior Mark Rubio, who this week was
Senator.
Senator.
Did you say senior? Sorry. I'm sorry. It came out. I didn't even mean to do that.
I hate Miss James. I've never missed James more than this moment.
I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to do it that time.
Who this week was publicly challenged by a Florida shooting survivor to vow to refuse to take NRA money, which we talked about earlier, has received at least $3.3 million from NRA during his career, the sixth most of current members of Congress. We also circle on, I just can't wait for our interview. We also talk about how the Moms Demand Actions website has a way where you can search to see if your respective congressional members have received money from the NRA and
how
much.
If anybody finds Mr. Rubio's spine out there, get it to Florida or DC, wherever he is. We'd love to help him find it. Because it must be so hard to walk and look yourself in the mirror. So a lot of general fuckery has also happened. So after we're moving on from Russia, if everyone's okay with that.
I'm fine with that.
Sound it out
I'm
in your car or wherever you're
that.
Listening to this. So after a testy call with Trump over the border wall, the president of Mexico says Mexican president shelves plan to visit White House. This is from a Washington Post article by Philip Rucker, Joshua Partlow, and Nick Miroff. Great name. Tentative plans for Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto to make his first visit to the White House to meet with President Trump were scuttled this week after a testy call between the two leaders ended in an impasse over Trump's promised border wall, according to U.S. and Mexican officials.
I still can't believe we're talking about this wall.
Yeah.
Like, I can, but I can't.
Well, enough to the point where now a leader of a country is not coming.
Bless you.
Excuse me.
I also just, it just seems so archaic because, like, we can just fly a plane over the wall.
Or dig a tunnel.
Dig a tunnel.
There's a
take
video,
a boat.
There's a video
fly to
of Donald
another
Trump.
Country, then drive to Mexico. Like, it's just.
Well, also most undocumented immigrants entered this country via flying, like a vacation or a short stay, and then just staying.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's very. Weird
that we're discussing
still talking
a wall
about. Like yeah
I can
just,
call my mom on a screen on my phone and speak to her as if she is
in the room yeah
and we are talking about a
you can
wall.
Put on a virtual reality headset and be like live streamed to another place because you're in the place of the camera over there so
right.
Like the fact that we're viewing this as like a feasible
like
not
scientists
we, the fact that Donald Trump and his colleagues are viewing this as like a reasonable
didn't like a year ago they like transported
reform?
Something to space or something like a speck of dust they did something who knows where they're at right now but we got to figure out this wall
we're working on cloning humans in the scientific field
multiple sheep have been cloned
and now we're talking about a brick and mortar wall it's mind-blowing but anyways, the Mexican president was eyeing an official trip to Washington this month or in March, but both countries agreed to call off the plan after after Trump would not agree to publicly affirm Mexico's position that it would not fund the construction of the border wall. Moving on.
So a poll. So most Americans are actually not getting bigger paychecks in wake of the tax overhaul. This is from The Hill by Max Greenwood, where he writes that more than half of U.S. voters say they have not noticed an increase in their paychecks following a sweeping series of tax cuts signed into law by President Trump last month, according to a new Politico Morning consult poll. Just 25% of registered voters reported an increase in their pay compared to 51% who said they did not. The number of employed voters who noticed an increased wage was higher at 37%, according to the poll. Still, 53% said they haven't noticed an increase in their paychecks. Respondents who identify as Republicans were more likely to report higher paychecks after the tax overhaul, pollsters found. 32% of Republicans said they noticed higher paychecks compared to 21% of Democrats and 22% of independents. The Political Morning Consult poll pegged public support for the law at 45% and opposition at 35%. That's the same as a similar poll released last month.
And reality sets in for the coal industry. Trump is powerless to save it. This is an article on Think Progress by Joe Rahm. President Trump campaigned on a pledge that to end the supposed war on coal that he claimed President Obama had been waging. Again, if you'd like to dig back in the archives of We Real Podcast, we spoke with Madeline Stano of the Green Lighting Institute about how there is no such thing as clean coal.
That's true. Today's
a day of callbacks.
So, you know, the comedian Pete Holmes once said that callbacks are sort of a reward to the audience for listening. So reward yourself and give yourself a listen of our past episodes.
Nick's going to be listening to all of our episodes today after we finish recording.
I'm going
to
take
a deep dive down memory lane
in the categories of activism and what to do.
What to do. Anyways, but the reality is that there's more coal capacity was retired in the first 45 days of 2018 than each of the 3 years of the Obama administration. So even Trump's own Environmental Protection Agency put out an analysis last year concluding that his efforts to undo Obama's Clean Power Plan could kill some 100,000 Americans over the next few decades. Murderer.
Yeah, we're both starting to do newscaster cadences.
Did
you notice that?
Ooh.
You just said was retired in the first 45 days of 2018, then each of the first 3 years of the Obama administration. I've been doing it too.
Great.
That's fun.
All right, so we have a few pieces of good news before we jump into
good news.
Our really great interview. There's an article written by David Weigel.
I'm not in the business of correcting.
That's not true. You definitely are.
I know.
It's very high on your list of things to do.
I know.
Anyways, he wrote an article in the Washington Post titled, Democrat wins state house race in where? Kentucky after a Republican scandal and suicide. So the Democratic Party run of good news and state legislative race continued on Tuesday when the former legislator beaten in the 2016 Republican wave reclaimed a seat held briefly by a pastor who committed suicide. And that is very sad. After being accused of molesting a teenage girl. That is very,
that sparks
a lot of anger and is also very sad.
Yeah.
So Linda Blechner, a Democrat at first election in 2008, won the special election for Kentucky's 49th district with 68.45% of the vote. In 2016, Donald Trump won Kentucky by the biggest margin of any Republican presidential candidate in history. And then Blechner lost by just 156 votes, which is not very many people, to the pastor. So anyways, fast forward. In the end, Blechner has easily defeated Johnson, marking the 37th. Why are you laughing at me?
Because it's I think it's Belcher.
Is it really?
Or Belker.
What have I been saying?
Blechner.
Belker?
Blechner?
Wouldn't Blechner be B-L-E-C-K-H-E-R?
It's B-E-L-C-H-E-R.
Yeah.
Yeah, Belcher. You're saying Blechner. Where's that N?
I don't know. I hate you.
I didn't do anything.
Like
you.
You
looked at me.
Well, because you were like cackling in the corner.
I wasn't cackling.
Yes, you were.
No, because you could hear
you
the cackling.
I'm done
cackling.
With this. Anyway, so she won. Candidates to get excited about. I'm so done with you right now. First of all, there's a really good article that came out in CNN that speaks to the midterm. So that is something we touch on with Jennifer and a few. But it was published on February 20th called The Places That Will Decide the 2016 Midterm Elections. And it does an interesting it does a good job of summarizing kind of like blocks of areas to keep a keep a tab on. So the clearest opportunity for Democrats is the relatively few remaining Republican held district in blue metro areas with large populations of college educated whites, and in many cases, substantial minority and youth populations as well. So one of the areas they highlight is around suburban Philadelphia. And we're taking a look today at the 6th congressional district that's currently held by Ryan Costello, a Republican. So there's two Democratic candidates that have registered thus far, and we wanted to highlight Chrissy Houlihan.
Go ahead.
Great. She is she's got a lot of things that are wonderful about her. She's the daughter of a Holocaust survivor. She's a career naval officer. She earned her engineering degree from Stanford. She was a Teach for America Corps member. She worked for she was a chemistry teacher in North Philadelphia. She served as the president and COO/CFO for Springboard Collaborative, which is a Philadelphia-based nonprofit focused on improving early childhood literacy in underserved communities countrywide. And she's pretty great. So if you go to her website, she has a really powerful message around why she is no longer willing to sit back. She talks about the dysfunction in Washington. She's especially troubled by their current representative and believes that he's contributing to the destruction. He's supported and advanced this administration's dangerous policies through his direct action and his votes or by his silence. And she says, quote unquote, "We've learned since January how terribly damaging and destructive a Trump administration paired with a complicit Congress can be." So her priorities include ensuring quality, affordable health care for all Pennsylvanians, great schools for every child, growing the economy, gun violence prevention, hello, money in politics, protecting our environment and combating climate change, supporting veterans and their families, and women's health. So while the, I believe through the end of March, more Democrats might register, and there is the other Democrat, Bob DeTore. But we think that Chrissy Houlihan is a good one to watch. So keep your eyes out for her. And
up
if you
next,
live in Pennsylvania, vote for her if you live in the district.
Up next, we have Deputy Director of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, Jennifer Hoppe. We are super excited about this interview. We hope that you stick around and check out our other podcasts that we have, that you can listen to our other episodes or the other podcasts on Campfire Media, because that's now the whole new thing. the rebrand.
All right, have a great week, y'all.
Bye.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to our second half of the episode. We have our first, I guess, repeat guest,
yeah.
And we're honored that it is this person. We have Jennifer Hoppe, who is the Deputy Director of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me back on.
Of course.
Yeah, thank you for coming back on. I know we just said this before recording. We're excited to get into the weeds and talk about all this stuff. Again, sorry that it has to be under the circumstances of the recent weeks, but excited to lend our voices to make a difference.
Great. So for our listeners, if you missed her first interview, it was our episode titled Brush Your Teeth, Then Call Congress, on October 15th. And in that episode, we learned a little bit about how Jennifer specifically got involved, how the growth of Moms Demand Action happened over these first, I just learned, 5 years, a little bit about safe gun storage and and in general, having gun reform being an actual deal breaker issue. So we wanted to bring Jennifer back on because of the recent experiences that are heartbreaking, and dig into it a little bit deeper to kind of get a more understanding about what we can do from here. So,
Jennifer, just to jump in, I mean, obviously we've seen as a nation in the past couple of weeks, big things happening in terms of the gun debate and gun control. How has the climate changed for you guys in the wake of Parkland?
It's a different world. I mean, the past 10 days, I guess, have been just a sea change of momentum and action in the gun violence prevention movement. I think really led by the kids who were speaking out and using social media so forcefully and eloquently. And the kids are leading, but Americans are following. We've had we've had previously scheduled lobby days for Moms Demand Action in places like Georgia and Missouri. In Georgia, we had almost 2,000 people turn out. We had people, you know, just normal meetings that we have are just overflowing, literally. They're having to have them outside of a library instead of in a room because there are just hundreds and hundreds of people showing up to meetings where we usually have, you know, 20, 30 folks. So something is definitely happening. You saw on Friday just an avalanche of businesses and corporate entities breaking ties with the NRA. So it's momentum and movement that of the likes I've never seen since I started in the movement about 5 years ago.
And how has the response, you know, this new, like, renewed attention on this issue, and now all these companies are leaving? How has the response been on your guys' side?
Well, as I said, there's just been an outpouring of people wanting to get involved. And I think a big difference between the national moment that happened after Sandy Hook and now is part of it is the fact that Moms Demand Action has 250 local groups across the country. So, you know, when Newtown happened, before I was involved, that was what got me involved in this issue. I didn't know what to do. I just stayed in my house and cried all weekend, you know?
Right.
And we actually have places for people to go. Just on an average week, we have about 150 to 200 events around the country. And so people are just coming and just pouring in because they want to know what they can do to make a change. And we're very honored and privileged to allow people to have that outlet to get involved.
And I can imagine with this, like, in surge or upsurge of number of people coming to the table, that you're having to do a lot of education and letting people know exactly, you know, where we're at in the conversation. So how are you managing, like, information flow? Because every state is at a different spot in this gun control reform.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're very fortunate to have a lot of really rock solid information about the realities of gun violence and how it impacts the United States, and not just in these horrific mass shootings as we saw in Parkland, but every single day, 93 people are killed and hundreds more injured. So, you know, young black men are disproportionately affected by gun homicide. Like, there is a whole kaleidoscope of awfulness around gun violence in America. So we do have really good information about how gun violence looks in the United States and actions you can take to start to help resolve it, or at least make it a little bit better. In the wake of Parkland, we rolled out a campaign to focus attention like a laser on the midterms. We know right now that Congress is most likely not going to take any meaningful action to provide solutions that will really help end gun violence. And so if you go to everytown.org, Every Town for Gun Safety is our umbrella organization. Everytown.org/throw them out is a five-step plan that you can take to get involved and to find out where your legislators are on this issue and put them on notice right now that if they aren't voting the right way on this, if they're voting for spurious quote-unquote solutions like arming teachers instead of taking a real hard look at legislation that will make meaningful strides to solve gun violence, put them on notice and then get involved in the campaign. So again, that's everytown.org/throw them out.
And you brought up something that I'm still trying to grapple with, being an idea that has happened, but arming teachers, like, there's so many things wrong with that, but I'd like to hear from your perspective, like, when someone comes to me who's probably related to me and a Republican and it's like, this might be a good idea, what is the most cohesive data evidence-based response to that idea?
Well, I think you should really listen to the teachers who are speaking out on this, and you've heard more and more of them talking about it, including I don't know if you saw the CNN town hall last Wednesday, but it was really extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And one of the Parkland teachers was very eloquent. She said, you know, I voted for Trump. I support the Second Amendment, but what am I supposed to do as a teacher with a gun? It's a chaotic situation. These kids are running at me. Am I supposed to hide them? Am I supposed to try and go find the shooter? Am I supposed to fire in a general direction where there might be kids running around and I could hit the wrong person? And then when the police come into the school and I'm holding a gun, you know, I don't want to be the one holding a gun. So I think those are all incredibly, you know, frightening and eye-opening perspectives about it. But then also, you know, as a parent, I have two kids in elementary school, right? And the idea of them going into a school where, God willing, a shooter will never come into their school. You know, what happens on just an average day when you have kids, whether they're elementary school, middle school, high school kids, who are curious what happens if a gun is left on a, you know, teacher inadvertently leaves the gun on a desk, or if there's a fight in a high school hallway and kids get out of hand. I mean, when you play it out, it feels good in a way. I get how viscerally it feels good to say, well, you know, there's someone there to protect my kids with a gun, but you play it out in your head and it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense, and it's not a solution. And what it is an excuse for politicians, again, who want to divert attention from solutions that could actually prevent these shootings before they happen. It gives them something to talk about that seems like they're doing something.
And yeah, well, I will say also, as a troublemaking child, I once had a teacher told me that she almost retired because of me. So I am very much not in favor of teachers having guns. I was a loudmouth kid. So I am curious now, because, yeah, there's the arguments coming. So a lot of people are saying, you know, we should arm teachers, right? But on the other side, we have people from the left. I have friends asking, you know, do we need guns at all? Should we move towards a completely gun-free society? What is that like now that there's so much attention in the wake of Parkland being addressed on what issues are moving forward? What is the general message that you guys are trying to push?
Right. So I think, first and foremost, we have the Second Amendment in the U.S. People have a right to, law-abiding people have a right to have a gun. That's just fact. And I think that energy should really be focused on solutions, as I said, solutions that are really going to take meaningful steps to stop gun violence. And, you know, no one's talking, at least no one's talking seriously on a national level about coming in and taking all your guns. It's never been a real part of the broader gun violence prevention movement. I think that said, we have very, very lax gun laws, and they're riddled with loopholes in many cases in the U.S. So there's so much we can do to make the country safer, reduce gun violence. One thing that you may have heard of in the wake of this week are these so-called red flag laws. The Parkland shooting, if you have read or heard anything about the shooter, everyone knew that this 19-year-old had major issues and was very troubled. He threatened students. He'd been expelled from schools. His mother, who has since passed away, had called the police on him. So a lot of people are saying, why weren't his guns taken away or removed? Well, the fact of the matter is, in Florida, there's no legal mechanism for removing those guns unless he committed a crime or whatever. So red flag laws allow law enforcement and families to petition a court for the temporary removal of someone's firearms. So if someone is presenting as a threat to themselves or others, either law enforcement can, in the course of a call to that person's house, or if a family member informs law enforcement or the court and says, look, this person is suffering from very acute agitation. I think they're going to do something either to themselves or others. A judge can have a very speedy hearing and order the temporary removal of the guns. So that allows, it does a lot of things. It takes away, obviously, the lethal weapon. It gives the person the opportunity to seek help, you know, whatever kind of help they need to get themselves back into a state of normalcy. And then it also allows, if they can prove that they are no longer a danger, or if the judge is reasonably convinced that they're no longer a danger, then they can, it's not like they're relinquishing their rights to have firearms forever. So it's a very common sense solution that does not infringe upon someone's constitutional rights, but still is goes a long way to help public safety. So that's one major thing. Another thing, you know, just basic background checks on all gun sales, which, you know, would maybe not have stopped this particular shooting, but that's probably the single biggest thing that could help reduce gun violence in America. And then also high-capacity magazine limits. You know, a lot of research has shown that accessories like silencers, bump stocks, like we saw in Las Vegas, high-capacity magazines that we've seen in almost every mass shooting of this type, they, all of those accessories are up the fatalities and up the casualties. So looking at regulating those while keeping silencers regulated looking at getting rid of bump stocks as well as high capacity magazines is also something that I think needs some serious attention. Mm-hmm.
And I remember last time we talked, you also mentioned that the gun lobby was pushing concealed carry reciprocity, which allowed people to carry guns across state lines. I assume that's still something that's very much at the front of our minds and moving forward. So how is that being also fought for?
Right. So that is the gun lobby's top priority at the federal level. I think, it's not going to stop being there may be less attention on it or hearings canceled or whatever. But rest assured, they will try and get it through. And just to recap a little bit about what exactly concealed carry reciprocity is it's basically like it makes the lowest common denominator or the lowest amount of training applicable to all states. So if I go to a state that has very, very, very lax regulations to actually get a permit to conceal carry, then let's say Alabama or something, there's low standards. If I get that permit there, then I can take that gun anywhere in the country, even states that have stronger permitting requirements. So the gun lobby likes to liken it to a driver's license, like, right? You get your driver's license in one state, you could drive anywhere. But to get your driver's license, we have pretty uniform standards. You have to take a test. You have to, you have to prove that you can drive. You have to get a license. You have to register your car. Like, it is completely not like that at all. In some states, it's easier to carry concealed than it is to get a library card. So, you need to look at that, and it's very, very dangerous. So all of that is to say, it remains the gun lobby's top priority, and they may be back on their heels a little bit at the moment in the public, but what they are counting on is that people stop paying attention and that people, you know, this intensity lessens up in a couple of weeks. So we don't want that intensity to lessen up. We want people to stay focused, be very vigilant about the actions that they can take, and keep letting their legislators know that you will not tolerate a vote in favor of concealed carry reciprocity.
So, yeah, in terms of that, now with our future legislators and going on to 2018 and 2020, during the town hall, one of the most striking things I thought was when, I believe it was a young student asked Senator Bill Nelson from Florida, I think it was Jake Tapper, that asked them, you know, when Democrats had power in 2009 and 2010 with a 60-vote majority, there was nothing done. And then Senator Nelson said that that was a fault of the Democratic Party and that was something that they missed. Moving forward, you know, we know that on the right, they generally support the Second Amendment. How do we hold our leaders on the left accountable? And is them apologizing retroactively enough?
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm glad you brought that up, actually. First of all, I want to say, like, a lot of legislators on the left respect the Second Amendment. I respect the Second Amendment. It's not like an anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment thing. It's kind of like a false equivalency. Mm-hmm. But in terms of holding legislators accountable, you're absolutely right. So my home state Senator Mark Warner of Virginia voted for concealed carry reciprocity when it came up in 2013. It was voted on along with background check bill that failed. He voted for background checks against concealed carry reciprocity. Well, he's been contacted by many Virginians, and many of them are members of Moms Demand Action. And we've all, you know, told him, like, this was a wrong vote. We're not going to tolerate you voting this way again. And since then, he's come out in public support of, public opposition to concealed carry reciprocity. Same thing happened in Missouri with Senator Claire McCaskill. These are folks who maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it would have been really, really hard for them to take a vote that was, perceived as being perceived as being something that was part of the gun control movement or whatever, so to speak. We've made it safe. We've made it safe for them to be vocal as an advocate for gun violence prevention. We've made it okay, and we've frankly made it more difficult for them to take these votes that they before people weren't even noticing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's like the important thing is to kind of hold their feet to the fire, because we're talking now about, you know, the what we're doing moving forward with the left, you know, with senators like Joe Manchin, Claire McCaskill, Heidi Heitkamp in very deep red places. Yeah, are there people also signing up? Have you heard about, you know, we interviewed Amanda Littman with Run for Something. Have you heard stories about people now signing up in the past 2 weeks or in the past month as a result of everything that's happening? Signing up to run for office, to be specific.
To run for office?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yes. So we've had volunteers in last November, actually. We had something like a dozen or 13 members of Moms Demand Action, people who volunteer with Moms Demand Action, ran for office. And 9 or 10 of them actually won. So
Wow. They're
already running for office. Yeah, they're already running for office. We have volunteers running for their state houses. We have volunteers running for city council, school board, you know, all over the map. And that intensity is just going to continue. And I think people who have never before even entertained the notion of running for office have kind of had it and said, you know, if the people that we elected aren't going to do their jobs, aren't going to keep us safe, aren't going to listen to constituents, then we'll take their seat.
Yeah. And so, touching on that and what you brought up earlier about the midterms. So, you know, it's coming up faster than it all feels like because, you know, I can't believe it's already February, much less November. You know, so what
time flies
when you're having fun. you know, so people can call Congress to keep their current, you know, council members and et cetera, you know, accountable. But what else can we be doing in between now and the midterm elections to quote unquote throw them out?
Sure. I'm really glad you asked. And if you do go to that site, everytown.org/throw them out, there is a really straightforward 5-step plan that you can do. So the first one is to pledge to vote for gun safety. You sign a pledge. We will remind you when you sign that pledge. So
nice.
Hold you accountable. Get your family and friends to do it as well. Second is look and see are your current legislators accepting money from the NRA? We have the ability for you to enter your zip code into an interface, and it'll show you if your legislators are accepting donations from the NRA. So if they are, find out how they voted and give them a call. And as I said, put them on notice and tell them that you are planning on voting on this issue and they better get their act together. The third, this one I want to talk about too. We've seen a lot of influx from young people and students. Obviously, the Parkland students leading the way on that. But registering to vote. So if you are going to be a new voter, regardless, make sure you're registered to vote, everyone. Make sure your friends and family are registered to vote. But if you're, you know, a teenager and you're approaching your 18th birthday, find out when you can register to vote. A lot of states let you register when you're 17 or even 16 in some cases. But so register to vote if you can. If you can't, and you're a young person, like, there are plenty of ways to get involved as well. You can volunteer on a campaign. You can canvass. You can make phone calls. You can do voter registration drives yourself. So I do want to be really cognizant of the fact that even if you are not of voting age, you could make a big difference on this issue. Also, we are Moms Demand Action is getting candidates on the record on their position about gun safety. So via our Moms Demand Action chapters, we are giving a questionnaire to candidates to get them on the record to say whether they stand for or against gun safety, frankly. So get involved with your local Moms Demand Action chapter. You can text ACT, A-C-T, to 64433, and you'll get a list of local events. So if you want to help in that process of getting candidates on the record, you certainly can. And then the fifth, and this is kind of a much bigger step, but we were just talking, run for office if you can. If you don't see a candidate that you like or you can get behind, then figure out if you can maybe take that seat yourself.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's amazing to get involved on every single way, whether you're voting or whether you're running for office. Again, you said 64433 was the number that you text ACT
to? Yes, text ACT, A-C-T, to 64433.
Okay, cool. I want to make sure we have that written down. Now, I'm curious. So let's say you have somebody joining up with Everytown or Moms Demand Action, and they're new into this fight, but they want to get involved. And a lot of this fight can be very mentally taxing. And I think we've talked about this before, but I'd love to rehash it. So often this fight is literally life and death. So what do you have recommendation-wise for somebody now just wanting to dive into this fight, but also having to deal with the weight of some of the mental health issues of I'm not talking about mental health issues in the gun control debate, but having a healthy outlook during this fight.
Right. I'm really, really grateful that you brought that up, especially because we're seeing so many students and young people getting involved. It is hard work and it is very emotionally taxing. So if you're going to get involved, you really need to be aware of that going in and understand that it's going to be a long, long road. Legislative change, particularly, maybe a long time coming, and that's okay. And you need to remember to give yourself breaks. You don't have to work on this 24/7. There's lots of meaningful things you can do that, you know, take stock of how much energy you have that day, how much you actually feel like of yourself you can pour into something. You can always dial up and dial down your activism, but we say at our office a lot, you can't drink from an empty cup. You need to make sure that you are practicing self-care. We often recommend to our volunteers that they disconnect a little while from media, from screens, to connect with family and friends and engage with them and just take breaks. Watch, you know, I like to watch reality TV, right? do, you know, bake cookies with your kids, as I just did this afternoon. You really need to keep a check on yourself and your emotions and give yourself permission to step out in as you need to.
Right. I mean, I think we hear that time and time again from all of our guests that, you know, activism is exhausting and it's hard work, but, you know, and you do have to take time for self-care, but also know that, you know, you're not doing it alone. So if you go down the rabbit hole of phone banking and are very upset, call a friend that believes in what you're fighting for. You know, reach out, because you're not, no one's by themselves in this fight. Thank goodness. So there's so much to do, Nick.
There is so
we
much
have
to
a
do.
Lot to do.
I literally just pulled up Twitter and Shannon Watts retweeted that Moms Demand had a meeting in Kirkland, Washington today. And the picture, there are tons of people there. So
love it.
There's so much to do and there's so many people doing it.
So find your local Moms Demand group. Visit everytown.org/throw-them-out. Also, I just wanted to remind everyone that Everytown has an excellent gun law navigator tool that we talked about last time, about figuring out exactly what's happening in your neighborhood, in your state, city, etc. Text
64433. Text ACT to 64433. For local events.
And we have a lot to do between now and November and after that, of course. So Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on again. We appreciate your hard work and we are
grateful.
Yeah, that's really, and we're trying to do some ourselves over here. So thanks for coming on to inspire our listeners as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me and thank you for paying attention to this really important issue.
Every day is the day to talk about gun control.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Cool. If you want to check us out, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts. We are We Rebel, werebelpodcast@gmail.com. We do respond to emails. Give us
we
a rating,
emails.
A comment. We really like those, too. Those are tons of fun. You can find us at We Rebel Podcast on Twitter, on Instagram. We post a bunch of fun stuff. Again, 64433. Text ACT to that to get involved with Moms Demand. Thank you again, Jennifer.
Thanks again.
Campfire.
Hey, this is Patrick.
And this is Mark, co-hosts of Nintendo Cartridge Society.
Join us every week as we talk about all things Nintendo.
The latest Nintendo news.
The oldest Nintendo news.
Games you used to love.
And games you used to hate.
Everything Nintendo.
That's every Tuesday. Join us on Nintendo Cartridge Society.